1 half hour to go here on the Hot Talk Morning Show. I know a number of folks that will be heading on out to the many different Veterans Day ceremonies that we've got going on around the area. 11 o'clock over at the General Robert H. Reed Recreation Center over in the Market Common here in the city of Myrtle Beach. Over at Coastal Carolina tonight, 7:30 at the Wheelwright Auditorium. And lots going on in the news, of course, nationally today. Our friend Meg Kennard is a political reporter, national political reporter with the Associated Press, back with us on the Hot Talk Hotline this morning. Meg, it's great to hear you again. I hope all is well.
It is, Joe. It's so good to be back with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been far too long, actually. I just forgot to message you, and I'm like, oh, man, there's tons going on up in Washington, D.C. Let's see if she's got some time for us here this morning. The longest government shutdown is almost over, or is it? What needs to happen over the next little while to get the government back into resuming normal operations?
Almost there. You're right. The Senate had a late-night vote last night to do their part in terms of passing a new funding bill. But now the process is that has to go back to the U.S. House. And House members have not been in regular session during this entire shutdown. So it's been weeks, really, since they've been in the chamber doing their business, so that now they need time to get back to D.C. We don't expect to see any activity on their portion of debate and hopefully in the minds of Americans and the Congress, hopefully passage until at least tomorrow at the earliest. So today is going to be a travel day for a lot of members of Congress, which, as we all know, has been very difficult for all of us during the shutdown with flight cancellations and delays. But that will be the earliest. And then the president would then be on deck next to sign the bill. He has indicated that he's somewhat supportive of this. He hasn't necessarily 100% weighed in and said, yes, I'll absolutely sign it. But he has said in the last couple of days he expected the shutdown was coming to a close. And so reading the tea leaves, we anticipate that he will sign the bill once it eventually gets to him.
We need to end the shutdown. We need to end the shutdown. Oh, wait, no one can get to Washington because all the flights are delayed or canceled. So the government might be shut down longer than we hoped it would.
Well, hopefully all those travel delays start to get better in the next couple of days. But nothing is automatic. We've seen flight cancellations kind of cascading in terms of what, you know, the officials have said to try to accommodate for air traffic controllers and other workers who have not been around and trying to alleviate some of those pressures. There will be more cancellations happening today, but given everything that we've seen over the past couple of days, it's anticipated that at least the add-on percentage of all of those won't be necessarily as high as it could have been because other flights just couldn't happen. Planes were in the wrong places. They couldn't necessarily get back on track the way that they thought they would. So we'll see more cancellations, but it just won't be as much as necessarily anticipated.
Now, 8 Democrats join Republicans in breaking ranks and allowing us to move through that filibuster 60-40 the vote. When it comes down to the continuing resolution and some attachments to this, in terms of concessions or, who politically, quote-unquote, wins, loses this battle, what does that look like just from the framework and then leading into the political implications, if any, moving forward?
There are always politics underneath all of this. And we did see these 8 Democrats breaking off, as you know, to support what passed through the Senate last night. But a lot of these senators aren't up for re-election or they're not running again. And so that may politically have put them in a safer spot to be able to go against their party, against maybe the wishes of some of the voters to whom they would be going for support if they were running for re-election right now into the next cycle. And they've received a lot of pushback from people within the Democratic Party, from their colleagues on the House side of the Capitol, saying this is not what we should have done. We didn't get anything out of this. All of the debate we've been having about Affordable Care Act subsidies hasn't happened yet. And so we really did all of this for no gains for our motivations and what we wanted. And there are a lot of members of Congress on the Democratic side who have been posting to social media that they're hearing from their constituents and other people, why did your colleagues do this? Why did they cave in? Why did they give the Republicans this win? We could have kept going. And of course, on the other side of that, there are a lot of people saying it's time for this to end. This is very frustrating. People aren't getting paid. They're still having to show up to work in many cases. And of course, there have been all of the debates over SNAP payments and other benefits that aren't being processed because of the shutdown. So it's always a contentious debate when these things happen. But now we are seeing within the Democratic Party, particularly, a lot of disagreement over how it's coming to an end.
It's going to be interesting to watch how the Republican Party reacts come next year, moving into 2028, when Donald Trump rides into the sunset. But the Democrats going through sort of an identity crisis, right now, given that their old guard and Nancy Pelosi announces last week that she'll be stepping away, retiring after, she has served in Congress just about as long as I've been alive. With that said, Chuck Schumer, kind of in a lose-lose situation, right, as the Senate Minority Leader earlier this year when he joined Republicans to keep the government open through a continuing resolution. He was lambasted by some in his party, and now that he has not been able to corral the eight Democrats to stay on their side, he's getting lambasted once again by those very same people. Is his leadership position in stake moving into the next few weeks?
There has been a lot of criticism, certainly, for Chuck Schumer in all of this, in not being able to wrangle the Democrats into something that many in their party think would have been more beneficial for their motivations. We do see this happen cyclically. It was, I think, earlier last year when Democrats in the House made decisions in terms of their leadership. Our sole congressional Democrat here in South Carolina, Jim Clyburn, had long been part of House leadership in the Democratic Party. And he and Pelosi both decided that it was time for them to move out of those roles and to make way for that next generation of leadership. They didn't leave the chamber at that point. They just left the leadership. So that could be part of what's on the minds of some who are looking at Senate leadership and thinking, okay, well, maybe it's time for them, too, to make way for the next folks to come through, for younger leaders. This is all, of course, kind of a convenient timing for people with that argument to be making it, with the shutdown having gone the way that it has, and House and Senate Democrats being part of, there's some criticism for their leadership in all of this as well. So it could be. Obviously, I don't know the motivations that are in the minds of people like Chuck Schumer and those who make those decisions. But Republicans, too, have made leadership changes, certainly over the last year, in terms of their leadership in the Senate. So it could be, this could be the opportunity for Democrats to be doing something similar.
No question, though. I mean, if you look long term, right, over the next half decade or so, a lot of that old guard, the career establishment type folks who have been there controlling the strings one way or the other, they're no longer going to be there. And a new generation, right, a crop of new people are going to really get a stranglehold, right, of business in D.C. over the next 4 or 5 years. No?
It certainly could be that way. You're right. When we think about the end of the second Trump administration, which is clearly only a year in, not even at this point, but still, we're already planning for the 2028 cycle. And so presidentially and in the midterms, for sure, before that, there will be opportunities for there to be this changeover and for people and representatives and senators of different mindsets and different generations to be coming into power in Washington. What remains, as when we talk to voters in all manner of elections, are some similar motivating factors when they're thinking about whom they want in those positions, and they're thinking about economic issues, and they're thinking about things that directly affect them, and not necessarily the much bigger picture that we often hear about in electoral debates on the campaign trail of all of the issues. Oftentimes it does come down to the economy. Sure. And so it will be interesting to hear what whoever the next generation of leaders on either party, when they're coming to the fore, what arguments they're making on those issues, because time and time again, we always hear that's what's most important to voters.
Meg Kinnard is a national political reporter with the Associated Press, based out of here in South Carolina. Well, speaking on that note, just in terms of the economy, prices, and as you mentioned, the reason why Democrats were trying to hold out on the Senate side was due to the expiration of these subsidies that has kept the premiums for Affordable Care Act recipients kind of leveled off over the last few years. It was the Democrat Congress, of course, that passed the COVID-era subsidies, which they voted on to expire at the end of this year. When it comes to those subsidies, I mean, not necessarily right a selling point if you're a Republican moving into the midterms to vote to allow your health insurance premiums for millions of people to increase moving into next year, once again weighing in on the everyday sort of economic issues that American families are facing.
Right. And this legislative package that is what is hopefully going to be part of what ends the shutdown kind of left out any clear resolution on that issue. the only guarantee is that there will be some sort of a vote next month about those enhanced premium tax credits, which are what expire at the end of the year without Congress taking action. And so when folks are thinking about that, at least there will be that, but that would only go into effect and really cover them into the new year. There would still need to be a more extended debate over what happens to that. And we have heard representatives from both parties speaking out about how they have heard from constituents who are concerned about this. And so in the overall broader debate over Republican frustration about the Affordable Care Act and the years of promises that we've heard that it would be overturned, there doesn't seem to be as much overall appetite for that. But in dealing with the nitty-gritty of the ways that this overall package does affect people's lives and the decisions that now at the end of the year they have to be making about their own care for them and their families moving into the next year, that is of concern for a lot of people who are like, okay, well, we do get this stopgap measure. We're going to have something that covers us in the short term. But what happens to that bigger debate? And that is the point on which many Democrats are frustrated, because they wanted to have that overall debate before now and not just a piecemeal month by month kind of thing.
Well, I think, you know, both parties can kind of play it to their favor, you know, if they spin it the right way, right? Republicans could say, look at the mess that the Affordable Care Act has created, hasn't done anything in terms of cost. We got to continue to, you know, print money and, you know, float the bill, essentially, from Washington. And on the flip side, Democrats could say, well, where's the Republican plan? They've had 12 years, and they've been campaigning on this for 12, 14 years, and they still can't come to some sort of consensus on how to address, you know, health care coverage in our country. So it'll be interesting
to
watch.
And let's not forget, during the presidential debates in the last cycle, when then-candidate Donald Trump was asked, well, what would you do about something different? That's when he said that he had concepts of a plan. And it still, at least from what we've continued to hear from Republicans, kind of seems to be where it is. There's not necessarily a fully formed plan to replace this. And so that's what Democrats continually come back to, of saying, yeah, well, maybe you don't like the system that we have. You have been campaigning against it for a long time, but you've yet to present us with anything that would really stand in its place.
Yeah, no doubt something that will be a big talking point moving into next year in the midterms. All right, as we wrap up with Meg Kennard, national political reporter with the Associated Press, based out of the Palmetto State, here with us this morning, and some news that maybe didn't get the coverage that it typically would, given the headlines yesterday out of Washington. The U.S. Supreme Court handed down some decisions. What was on their docket on Monday? Monday.
It's hard to keep the day straight sometimes when we have all of this stuff that's coming through at once. But one of the things that we did see from the Supreme Court was a rejection of a call to overturn the landmark decision there regarding same-sex marriage and legalizing it across the country. This is obviously a case that's been going on for a decade now, since that 2015 ruling that did legalize the practice across the country. And one of the court clerks in Kentucky, whose name was all over the headlines at that point, Kim Davis, is the person who has been behind this appeal, basically seeking the Supreme Court to overturn a lower order that she had been ordered to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages to a couple to whom she denied a license during all of that debate. And the high court in Washington said that they wouldn't consider this case. And so this has been seen as a victory by many who support same-sex marriage and its legalization across the country, saying the high court has determined that they're not in the mood to relitigate this, to take this back up, that will stand. There's always a continuing debate kind of reading into the justices' previous decisions and seeing if they telegraph anything for other decisions, obviously going to the overturn of Roe versus Wade several years ago and thinking, okay, could that overturn mean that other practices like the same-sex marriage legalization could also be overturned? And again, it doesn't appear that there is a large appetite for that to be happening, but it is something that people who follow these issues closely are watching very intently as these cases are presented to the court, and the court's rejection of this one, at least in this circumstance, seems to indicate that they are not interested in bringing that back up at this point.
Well, and given that three of those justices, were appointees under the Trump administration, it just goes to show that the court remains independent-minded and not necessarily influential based on who might be in the White House, right? Because there are a lot of calls by his detractors out there saying, look at these appointees, they're going to do this, that, and the other to the court. Well, in this specific case, it didn't necessarily pan out the way that they were predicting.
I think that anyone who makes assumptions that every justice appointed by a given president or a given political party will always fall in line with things that that president or that party are arguing would be incorrect to make those assumptions. We see it time and time again. And the Supreme Court, I mean, their number one goal is to uphold the Constitution and to interpret the laws of our country in terms of how they match up with that. And they go through lots of training and practice and reading and writing. And I think it would just be foolhardy to make assumptions that there will always be a dividing line that you can ascribe to the court. We do often see a lot of justices and decisions fall in line with the parties from which they came and were nominated, but that's not always the case. And it's much more nuanced than that. And so I think that when we watch these bigger, broader issues come through, that's just something to keep in mind. Sure, yes, there is agreement oftentimes, but you just can't make those assumptions. We see it time and time again.
Well, for those who are tuned in here this morning, if you gained nothing but this when it comes to the information that Meg Kinnard just provided us in terms of a detailed report on all things going on in Washington, D.C., is listen and read more of Meg Kinnard's work as compared to your favorite talking head that you may consume on a day-to-day basis on social media, who's going to tell you this, that, and the other, and just sort of hold your hand through the news cycle. Meg breaks it down objectively the way it should be done and not through a way just to gain clicks and notoriety maybe on social media. So, Meg, I appreciate your work as always, which is why we need to get you back on more often than not here when it comes to the news of the day.
Thank you, Joe. Always appreciate it. Y'all call me anytime.
That's Meg Kinnard, a national political reporter, once again with the Associated Press.